While that's happening, I will disclose that I am not the originally scheduled presenter, Jody Valenka of Whole Foods. So anyone who thought I might be, I apologize. I'll also disclose that I am an employee of Seventh Generation Incorporated. They pay my salary. I am also the father of four children, and it is important to me that the products that are available for them to use be as free of hazard as possible. And that to me is much more important than any conflict that might arise out of monetary concerns. So what I hope to do is briefly introduce you to the federal and state regulatory framework for the types of products that Seventh Generation makes. We make household cleaning products, baby diapers, and recycled paper products. I won't go into a great deal of detail because Dr. Dennison will do a far better job than I possibly could. Then look at some of the market responses to what is an inadequate system of regulation for consumer products. And then finally discuss the Seventh Generation framework and some of the standards that we impose on ourselves to make the products introduced to our consumers as low risk as possible. So to begin with the regulatory framework, I'll call it big kahuna of ingredient or chemical regulations is the Toxic Substances Control Act, which is administered by the Environmental Protection Agency. When it was enacted in 1976, it immediately grandfathered 60,000 chemicals in commerce. It does not require testing of new chemicals unless the EPA has strong reason to suspect the new substance has some toxicological endpoint of concern. And consequently, the products that are in the marketplace are, to a large extent, not tested for the toxicological endpoints that are of interest to us. And as I said, Dr. Dennison will discuss that in much greater detail. Furthermore, there's no requirement for testing, and the only requirement is that a manufacturer disclose any known hazard information to the EPA. So there's actually a disincentive to test, because if you don't know, you have nothing to report. The question was asked earlier, where is disclosure on labels required? Well, the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act requires a listing of ingredients for cosmetic and pharmaceutical products. But the ingredients themselves are not in any way reviewed by the Food and Drug Administration unless there is a medicinal claim. There is an industry panel, called the Cosmetic Ingredient Review Board that reviews the safety of ingredients and makes recommendations as to whether or not a substance should be restricted in any way. There is also, as we heard, the federal fungicide, insecticide, rodenticide Act, or FIFRA, which is administered by the EPA and controls products that make antimicrobial, disinfecting, sanitizing, or similar claims. That law actually does require fairly extensive testing of a substance, which I think is excellent. I think it's actually a model that could be used to look at chemicals more broadly. And the active ingredient in any pesticidal product needs to be put on the label at the concentration in the product. Furthermore, the Act gives EPA very strong regulatory authority to restrict what else is placed on the label. So you cannot talk about something being natural or good for the environment or having other favorable attributes if that product is FIFRA registered. So that limits the amount of fluff that could appear on a label, which I think is a positive thing. Cleaning products are regulated under the Consumer Product Safety Commission and very strongly the Hazardous Substances Act. The HSA defines acute toxicities like the LD50, irritancy, corrosivity, explosivity, reactivity, and if any of those acute hazards are present in a product, then you must, on the front label of that product, state caution and list the primary hazard presented by that product. So if you look at a bottle of bleach, you'll see the word danger, and then next to it will say corrosive, because bleach is highly alkaline and it is corrosive to skin. However, there's no requirement under CPSC for ingredient disclosure, only for hazard disclosure. Furthermore, it does a very poor job when it comes to chronic toxicities, because it's up to the manufacturer to decide what hazards are present, and a manufacturer could say, well, yeah, I know there's a carcinogen in there, but not at high enough a level to cause harm to the consumer. So there's a judgment call, and to Cal's earlier point, frequently it is the judgment of these companies that they've sufficiently controlled the element of exposure, that there's not much risk. In 2008, the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act was passed in response to the revelation that products being imported from China in particular had high levels of lead and chromium, phthalates, and other toxic substances, and they were not being regulated in any way. The CPSIA is particularly strident in what are called children's products, products that are intended for use by children, as are laws passed in the states of Maine and Washington. A very comprehensive state act was passed in 2008 called the Green California Green Chemistry Initiative, or CGI. Just this year, one aspect of the CGI was given administrative authority to proceed, and that is the Safer Consumer Products Regulations, which are being administered by the Department of Toxic Substances Control. And this has manufacturers look at a large number of substances that have known hazards and report to California why they, the manufacturer, are not using an alternative chemical instead of the hazardous chemical. And they're hoping that will drive companies to make substitutions for those hazardous materials. And then there are about a dozen additional states where toxic substances regulations are being considered but have not yet passed. The response of the marketplace and of consumers in particular to this is concern, because it is clearly not a regulatory environment that assures protection of the consumer. It's very patchwork. If you live in California today, you're better off than someone who lives in Alabama. The market has responded to this by retailers starting to impose their own restrictions on the use of chemicals. So Walmart in 2006 announced they were going to restrict three chemicals and products on their shelves. In 2013, they announced a phase-out of six chemicals, including at least one of the original three. Why they had to say it again, I'm not certain. And that became 10 substances which have not been identified, which are going to be phased out, I believe, by 2018. Whole Food Markets has a system called EcoScale. They have a list of ingredients of concern, and if you have those ingredients in your products, depending on what the particular ingredient is, your product should get a green, a yellow, or a red rating. They will not have on their shelves any product that has a red rating. And Target just announced a sustainable product plan in which, again, they will be looking at things like the presence of hazardous substances, the recycled content of packaging, and other sustainability indicators to score products, and those products that score well will be given prominent placement on their shelves. Whoops, I didn't want to go there. There were supposed to be more slides. Okay, well, while I'm getting my presentation, let me tell you, the framework that the Seventh Generation uses is one in which we look at four basic factors for our problems. And those four basic factors are the cost and performance, because consumers expect products to work in a certain cost performance range, the environmental hazards represented by that product, what's involved in sourcing the material, et cetera. And finally, I have 5 minutes, so I won't do this. So, and finally, human health considerations. And our human health standards, and I'll say them quickly, but hopefully clearly, are the following. We will manage acute toxicities, toxicities that present themselves quickly in the way we formulate our products. So if a particular substance has an LD50 that makes it toxic, we will not use that in a quantity that makes the final product acutely toxic. The same is true for irritancy and corrosivity and the other acute toxicities or acute hazards that the CPSC regulates. For chronic toxicities like carcinogenicity, reproductive toxicity, endocrine disruption, we refer to authoritative lists, and we will not use any product that is either on an authoritative list like the International Agency for Research on Cancer Group 1, 2A or 2B carcinogens, or that appears on the Endocrine Disruption Society website as an endocrine disruptor. We don't want to have to make a decision of what is or is not an endocrine disruptor and relying on the expertise of others. So that is how we manage chronic toxicity. We will not use chronic toxins or substances that express a chronic hazard. And finally, we believe in complete ingredient disclosure. Even though it's not necessary for us or required by law for us to list the ingredients in our products, we will list them using the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act framework with the enhancements that we will disclose fragrance ingredients explicitly on our label. That's not required under the FDCA. So thank you for your attention. I'm sorry that my slides disappeared.
So stay up here for a couple of questions. Come on, stay for a couple of questions. We go ahead.
I just had a question. You were saying you refer to authoritative lists.
That is correct.
But since the vast majority of chemicals in commerce don't really have sufficient toxicity testing, I was wondering, do you use chemicals that, how do you deal with chemicals for that you don't have information about toxicity? Do you use, you know, data for chemicals?
So there are methods that have been applied to judge or to estimate the toxicity of data poor chemicals. Read across lists. So if you have methyl spinach is a known carcinogen, but ethyl spinach is out there, we will not use ethyl spinach. The Environmental Protection Agency has an excellent suite of quantitative structure activity relationship tools called Sustainable Futures. We will use those tools. So no, we don't use, our standard is not to use any material that has a chronic toxicity. If a material has not been tested, then we rely on judgment and comparison to analogous materials to determine whether or not we will use it. I'm sorry, you should, as the moderator. Well, I don't work for either of those two companies, so I can't say, but I think your suggestion is probably quite accurate. They want to be seen as providing products that can be trusted because that trust translates directly to a consumer's trust in the store itself.
There was another question?
Okay, well, thank you very much.